Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 under the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Hinckley Institute of Politics strives to teach students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers internships to students of all majors, here locally, in D.C., and in 35 nations around the globe. Hinckley also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in D.C., and over $400,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is Community Engagement in Psychology. Today's guest is Colette Ankenman. She's a community-engaged scholar mentor and a student director of the Sunnyvale Neighborhood Center. Please join me in welcoming her.
So we're very honored to have, a great panel today, and I'm just going to give a brief biography of each of them. So right here we have Sean Megan, who is a professor of psychology. Professor Megan completed his PhD in developmental psychology at the U in 1999 and went on as a psychology professor at Western Illinois University, where he was quickly promoted and tenured. After 7 years of missing the mountains there, he returned to Utah in 2006 as a senior researcher with Intermountain Healthcare and has coordinated the general psychology course along with the community-engaged learning component ever since. He teaches a general psychology course every semester on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7:30 a.m. to a class full of non-psychology majors, trying to make the material as applicable and visible in real life outside the field of psychology as he can. The community-engaged learning component of this class is a great opportunity for people to see psychology come alive in the lives of others they are serving. He continues to strive towards his goal of being a lifelong ski bum in spite of his professional obligations and accomplishments. We also are honored to have two community partners. One is to Michelle Ortega. Michelle Ortega is a volunteer and community outreach coordinator at the Children's Center, a mental health facility for children diagnosed with a wide range of emotional, behavioral, and developmental problems. Michelle is from Honduras and moved to Utah a decade ago. Her early experience in television and radio in her home country led her to choosing broadcast journalism as her major at Brigham Young University. Soon after graduation in 2008, she had the opportunity to work for a local Hispanic media station, where she produced and hosted her own morning TV and radio shows. 3 years later, she left the cameras and microphones to join Zions Bank's multicultural department as a marketing and PR coordinator. It was through a Zions Bank co-worker that she learned about the Children's Center and became interested in joining this particular nonprofit. It has been over a year since Michelle started working at the Children's Center, where besides training volunteers, she has the opportunity to advocate for what she thinks is one of society's most urgent needs, mental health care. Interesting fact, Michelle was Miss Utah Latina in 2010 and represented Utah at the Miss Latina Utah U.S. competition, where she was awarded first runner-up. And then we also have Hester Henderson, who is both a professor and community partner. Dr. Hester Henderson earned her B.S. in psychology from Minot College, her master's in education and elementary education from George Mason University, her Ph.D. in special education from Utah State University, and her postdoc master's in special/adapted physical education from the University of Utah. She taught elementary school for 8 years in Virginia before moving to Utah. She has been on the faculty in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at the University of Utah since 1983. She teaches a behavior management course and the introduction to special adapted physical education course to all students in the pediatrics track and all of the 5 of the special adapted physical education graduate courses. In 2000, she started the UFIT program for children with disabilities and is still the director of that program. UFIT is a physical activity program for children with disabilities and their siblings ages 3 to 18. On Friday evenings, these 140 children come to the university and work one-to-one with university students. They do activities in the gym, swim, dance, art, and Xbox 360. She is a teaching fellow in the Center for Teaching and Learning and was recently accepted as a teaching fellow in the Health Sciences Academy. In 2013, she won the University of Utah Beacon of Excellence Award for the UFIT program. And we also have Michael Part, who is the CEL liaison as the TA for the psychology course. He graduated in 2011 with a BA in economics and is currently finishing up his psychology minor at the U. This has led him to delve into working with children over at the Children's Center, working as RA in 2 different labs, and working with risk adolescents and interning at Resilient Solutions Counseling Center. He is currently on the pursuit of a counseling psych PhD in the near future. So we'd like to start with some prepared questions we have for the panel and then open it up to the audience. So the first question we have is for all of you guys. Why have you decided to participate in community-engaged learning? What motivates you to teach this way or to sign up for a CEL-designated class or to be a community partner in the class? Also, why did you start and why do you continue with this program? So open to you all. So let's start.
I'll start.
Okay.
So one of the reasons I started this program is I saw a need in the field for kids with disabilities to have some kind of a program to come to. And so I talked to a couple colleagues, and this was the fall of 1999, and we just started meeting and wrote goals for the program, and we started in February of 2000 with about 15 kids, and we just did activities with them in the gym. And so then I saw the benefits to the kids, but I also saw the benefits to the students that were working with the kids. And so we just started expanding the program until now we have a cutoff point of 140 kids each semester that come up. And I work with people like Sean, who gives me volunteers from his program. And so community service programs at the university, service learning programs at the university, where there's a service learning component, the students will come and work one-on-one with my kids and get great benefits from. They learn to understand kids with disabilities more, understand what goes on in their families, what goes on with their siblings. They are become creative in ways to motivate them and to communicate with them. And they're more caring, more compassionate, I think, from having had that experience.
And from my perspective, why this is, I generally am not mic'd. I'm going to move this down because I don't need much of a mic with my voice. I participate in a community engaged learning class in part because there's no way I can teach all of the interesting nuances about human behavior in a 16-week class. Mm-hmm. Right? I've got 16 weeks, and in an intro class, I'm supposed to cover an entire field that is ginormous by all accounts, has so many different disciplines of psychology. And within a community engaged course, I can have students who are working with kids out in the community. They're working with adults at a homeless shelter. They're working with a whole variety of populations, navigating a whole bunch of life transitions, life challenges, and illustrating a whole lot of what my field is about that I'm never going to be able to teach in a class. And that opportunity to get students to engage in anything related to psychology beyond the delivered yammer that I might do in a lecture, which, I think I do an okay job. I tell some interesting stories. But, I'm not a clinical psychologist by training. I'm a developmental psychologist. I've never had a client. I don't do therapy. I know a bit about it. But it is so valuable for students to actually meet and work with people who've navigated mental illness or with children who are struggling with emotional or behavioral disorders and see what that's like beyond my little snippet I can do in class. And so for me, it's an incredibly valuable way to provide students with an opportunity to see psychology in real people's lives and be a part of that in many instances where they're providing services that are really valuable, both to the organizations we work with, but more importantly, to the people that these organizations are serving.
Well, and for the Children's Center, the partnership that we have had with the youth students has gone for years now. We actually used to have our facility here at the U, and we recently moved to downtown about 4 years ago. So we have always worked with the youth students, and it's always a pleasure because aside from volunteers that community volunteers visit us and they want to just help us out, we have the commitment that students have through their commitment in their classes. So it's really nice to have students who really are committed to the services they're providing, and also it's just good to raise the awareness and again provide the experience that they are perhaps lacking in their classrooms through theory. Now you get the hands-on experience of working with children that are diagnosed with those mental health and behavioral problems. So for us, it's just a great opportunity and a win-win situation where we have students learning their courses, and also we have the commitment that they provide to us, which we greatly appreciate.
Yeah, so bridging off what Michelle said, for me initially I kind of went in there because, I mean, I had any idea of, you know, what it was like delving into any professional side of psychology. So for me to kind of go in there, it was very new to me. I just kind of wanted to get a feel for, you know, how the infrastructure of, you know, a psychological, you know, organization works. So being in there, and I'm particularly not, I'm not like so stoked on kids or anything like that. So I mean, going in there for me, I was just like, oh no, what am I getting myself into? But you know, it's very self-revealing for the fact that, you know, once you're working with these kids, you kind of understand what type of communication you need to, you know, reveal to these kids, and you know how you reciprocate that. And so for me, it was just kind of get a little hands-on experience. And you know, and I've still been with the Children's Center after you know, my community engaged learning time was up, which was last year, and I continue to do so because I'm still learning more and more about, you know, about the kids in general, and most importantly, I think you know, the whole structure of, you know, how mental health care organizations work, and you know, the clients and professionals and how they, you know, meet up, and just seeing all that. I mean, it's definitely a whole, you know, knowledge in itself. So,
could you speak to your experience as a TA apart from? I asked you to be TA. Outside of that, what led you to want to become the community engaged learning liaison for this class? I mean, why did you want to continue on kind of with that administrative role? What do you get out of it? What do you like about it?
Yeah, so in particular, what was most most fun for me was I really wanted to kind of lead organizations or discussions and, you know, see what I can do, because I've never really done something like that, you know, to have like a group of kids, you know, listen to me and say, hey, I'm going to go grade your paper or something like that. So that was, it was very strange for me at first, but I kind of wanted to take on that little, you know, that leadership role and, you know, see what I can do to actually encourage these kids. And what I found most difficult at first was, how do you instill motivation in students and tell them, hey, look, you're going to need 30 hours of, you know, this so-and-so at this organization, and you're going to have to report back to me. So that was the hardest part, but it really was, personally for me, it was just kind of dealing with people one-on-one. You know, obviously at a more clinical setting like the Children's Center, but also at a, you know, a university setting from student to student. So a lot of that peer interaction was basically what I was really looking for. And, you know, finding that, you know, has definitely, it's been a learning experience, that's for sure. And yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoy it, so, yeah.
That's great, thank you. This next question is for Professor Megan. Can you describe how the community engaged portion of your psychology course works, and what do students in the community, how does this support what they are learning in your class?
Well, let's see how it works. We've got 8 or 10 community partners that we've worked with for many years, including here the UFIT program at the U Children's Center. We've worked with Salt Lake County Youth Services. They've got 2 different divisions there. We've worked with the Road Home, Guadalupe School, a handful of organizations out there who every semester, let me give a background. My intro psych course is a 4-credit hour. Is it a 4? Yeah, it's a 4-credit hour course, isn't it? I think it's a 4-credit hour course, and then they can add 1 credit hour to do the community engaged learning component of the course. And it's an optional component of the course. So I teach anywhere from 100 to 150 students, sometimes 200 students every semester, and only some proportion of them sign up before they even show up on day one. On day 2 of class, I make sure that I've got representatives from each of my organizations there to tell the story about who they serve, what kind of opportunities students have to work with the folks that they serve, what kind of responsibilities they'll have, what kind of impact they're going to have on other folks' lives, and, you know, effectively sell them on the idea of adding 30 hours to their lives, which I couldn't fathom doing. I didn't even work when I was in college. I was such a... just a plain old student who goofed off too much. I couldn't imagine how I'd find 30 hours. And so we've got to sell this idea that this is worth it, both from the service component, that you're going to get something so valuable out of this in terms of the lives that you touch and the work that you do, but also from an academic standpoint, that students who engage in community-engaged learning and who wind up taking on that responsibility, they participate in additional discussion sections, and they're writing papers doing things that are precisely what I'm demanding in my class. And that's looking for real-life examples of these psychological principles and theories that we've been talking about, kind of, and I yammer on a lot in class about this stuff. But in the end, when it comes test time, students need to be able to apply this. And there is no better way than working with people and thinking about and sitting with a guided discussion with Michael and the other folks engaged in community-engaged learning and thinking about, okay, what happened this week? What happened in the last couple weeks that looks like what we talked about in class, and really trying to come up with those concrete examples and really witness those behavior changes or emotion changes or anything like that that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. So how does it work? We introduce them. We get them to commit to 30 hours. They connect with their community-engaged partner organization. And on their own schedule, with whatever works for the student and with the organization, they arrange for a couple or 3 hours a week across the semester. And then they meet with Michael 3 times during the semester. It's a guided discussion where the dozen or 15 or maybe we're a little less than that this semester, folks who are registered for community engaged learning get together and kind of walk through exactly that. What did you do the last couple of weeks? How does it fit with class? How can we look for some of the things coming up in class in your next couple of weeks or next few weeks with these folks that you're serving? I believe there's also, is it 4 or 3 papers? 3 of those reflection papers?
4.
There's 4 reflection papers where on their own time, as opposed to extemporaneously in a group discussion, on their own time, they do the same sort of linking diary style of what's been happening and how does this relate to what we've been doing in this segment of class. So, for example, we just went through the whole big section on developmental psychology for the couple of weeks before spring break. So for those folks who are volunteering with UFID or the Children's Center in particular, they're working with kids regularly, and they can come up with illustrative examples of, okay, here's some kids I was working with, here's what we talked about in class with cognitive development or with social relationships or anything, and they've got a great example for that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of how it works. It runs as, in my class, it runs kind of as a parallel class. Michael handles a lot of the nuts and bolts of assignments and scheduling those reflection sessions and kind of guiding those discussions and linking them to class. I always choose a student to run my community engaged learning component that comes from my class and did well in my class and participated in it, so they know exactly what's expected of these students and they know what my course content's like, because I don't teach from a book. I have my own stories, and I like my TA to be very familiar with what I'm doing in class, so that they can, in their own discussions with those community engaged learners, really make that link and that parallel. What students do in the community? What do they do? Gosh, they do all sorts of things. We're working with kids, we're working with adults, we're working with immigrant populations where English is a second language, or there's logistic challenges for navigating this new world that they've emigrated to. Immigrated? Mm-hmm. I never know. The I versus the E. I'm sure someone in Hinckley could explain that to me. A lot of the work they do is one-on-one with individual children and individual adults, which from a service perspective, it's so meaningful and impactful, both for the student who's providing it, but also for the person receiving services or support, doing English language training at the Guadalupe School. It's such a big experience for them, as opposed to, providing logistic, clerical support to an organization. A lot of nonprofits out there need that. The nuts and bolts of bookkeeping and scheduling and answering phones, and a lot of our nonprofits can't work that without that kind of support. But for me in my class, when students ask, could I volunteer here, could I volunteer there, I'm always looking for and asking the question, are they going to have one-on-one experiences with individuals that they're going to be able to link to some of the stuff I'm doing in class? If you're talking on the phone, answering phones for a nonprofit, probably not. It's valuable work. But it's not what I want to have happen in my class. So that's the kind of stuff they're doing, interacting with those folks one-on-one.
Yeah, that's great.
Do you want to ask a question? Can I be more specific? Or do you want to get through your questions?
Well, I guess one of the last things was how does this support what they're learning in the class? Do you have any specific examples of students who had a really great experience with a theme or something in the class, and they went to community and really were able to master it or had a great experience of some sort?
Yeah. The couple that come to mind that students have told me about, mm-hmm. where they've come back and said, oh, my gosh, this is just amazing. A couple of the students who've worked at the Children's Center in the past have, you know, I reserve people think of psychology and I always think of the abnormal side of it. When are we going to talk about psychopathology and crazy? And that's always towards the end of the class and the end of the semester, because really psychology is a heck of a lot more than that. But I reserve that for the end of the class. And at the Children's Center, you've got kids who are navigating sometimes some mm-hmm. big emotional mental health issues at a really young age. And for students who spend, you know, 10, 12 weeks as they're getting to know these kids at the Children's Center, and then at the end of the semester, we provide some context behind defining mental illness and diagnosis and challenges with diagnosis and your labeling, when you assign a label and the idea of kind of living up to a label, self-fulfilling prophecies. So I've had students come back. I can think of one woman in particular who, you know, was working with an older child who said, my gosh, this kid knows their label and thinks of themselves as this label. And working with them, to the extent we can move away from any talk about a diagnosis or a label and just interact and be, all of a sudden behavior changes. Mm-hmm. But as soon as something comes up that makes salient for them, there's a label, their behavior changes, and it looks more like that label for them. Right? So it's just one of the examples where, you know, they've come back and said, oh my gosh, this class gave me a perspective to understand this variability I've been seeing for 10 weeks. All of a sudden, I've got a way to understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael, you spent time in my class and at the Children's Center. Were there any kind of defining moments for you at the Children's Center?
Yeah, so, I mean, based on everything that you learn in theory, you know, from the books and everything like that, and making that connection, that's, you know, the whole concept of what community engaged learning is for Sean's class in particular. And for being able to see, oh, like, you know, memory and, you know, developmental stuff and, you know, behavioral and connecting all those aspects of, you know, in-school materials to that real world, it just kind of starts clicking and starts making more sense. So I think that part of it was most revealing to me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, as you were talking about, you know, you see all the, you know, the glitz and glam of, you know, psychology and, you know, because the way Sean teaches, he teaches a 7:30 class. He actually makes it really fun. So surprisingly, and you go in there and you're like, oh, you know, psychology is awesome. And then you go to the Children's Center and you see all this and you're like, okay, well, maybe, you know, there are those parts of psychology that, you know, that you have to go and I guess not fix people, but, you know, you kind of start wondering, okay, what's the diagnosis on this person? And, you know, all of that. So a lot of curiosity churns, definitely. And, yeah, I would say that's what is most fascinating is connecting those two. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thank you. This next question is for you, Michael. What kinds of things does the community-engaged learning liaison do to help the students in the community? I know you touched on this a little bit. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, so basically what I try to do is I try to encourage, you know, I try to encourage the students to be open to the challenge, because for many of them, this is their first time ever being, you know, part of any mental health organization. So for them, it's very new to them. It can be a little shocking to them at the same time. So, you know, we'll run certain discussions such as, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, as Sean discussed, as well as prejudice. And, you know, how do you break those barriers? So this was our last discussion that we were having. And, you know, for certain students that come from, you know, a more reserved background and being revealed to this whole another group of people, such as, you know, going to the road home and, you know, meeting veterans that, you know, have, you know, been drinking their hearts out for 20 years, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, how do I handle this person? So it's like, what I try to encourage them and challenge them to do is, you know, how do you look past that? So what we discussed is if we can kind of incorporate a little community thing, and that's what we do at the Children's Center as well, is, you know, how can I get like two kids to, you know, play with me and everything like that? And that really does break the barriers, and you start to realize, like, oh, you know, this kid is capable of doing this, and this kid's not just someone that's, you know, part of a low, you know, socioeconomic, group. And, you know, these people are able to, you know, learn just as easily or if better than, you know, certain people from, you know, this category of things. And I try to kind of bridge that, I guess, the humanness of everything, and try to really put that into the mix of the discussions. Obviously, we talk about, you know, certain terms as well from the psych class, but yeah, we focus more on the whole, I guess, what you can do to offer, to the organization that you're volunteering at, and, you know, what are you good at, and whether or not you're actually interested in, you know, doing this as a professional, you know, career, because a lot of people like the idea of, yeah, I like helping people out, but, you know, is this something that you're capable of doing and, you know, doing for 40 plus years, you know, throughout the rest of your life? So I just want to make sure that, you know, it's very authentic and that they're able to see, you know, what they like and don't like and be able to separate the two. So.
Great, thank you. And this is for our community partners. Share your experience with working with the faculty and students to meet the needs of your organization and the community you're serving. How has the course benefited your organization, and can you provide any specific examples of this?
Well, obviously with my program, I have 140 kids that come up. Most of them have disabilities, but some of them are just siblings. And I have, in my own program, have 12 master's students and 2 doctoral students, so of course we couldn't work with all those kids at the same time. And the other part of my program is most of the kids that do have disabilities, 79% of them have autism. And so they need one-on-one work because you can't even do one-on-two, right? So I couldn't run my program without the volunteers from the classes that I get across the campus. Not even, we started with my department, and then we went to the College of Health, and then we branched out across the campus to get other volunteers. And I've just been amazed with how good those volunteers are and how committed they are. And we do a one-hour orientation before we start our program on a Friday night for a couple hours, and we bring them in and we talk to them about how the program runs and the different activities that they're going to be involved in, and what a kid with autism looks like, what are the common characteristics, and then we go through how do you use behavior management techniques with them, and what do you do if a kid has a seizure, and make sure that the kid hasn't eaten before he goes in the pool, because if he throws up, it closes the pool, and they charge me $1,000. So we orient them, and then we put them in color groups, and we have 5 color groups now with about 25 volunteers, and we give them the kid's folder, and they get to look at the folders and see what this kid's all about, so they can go and do some research on maybe they have a kid with Down syndrome, and they're not sure what to expect, so they can do research over the week before they meet the kid. And then we also have a parent interview, so they meet the parents and they ask the parent all these questions about their child and what goals do you want to work on. And then they have a goal sheet, and they do one motor goal, one cognitive goal, and one social goal with each of their kids. And then my students, who are the color group leaders, are responsible for reading those progress reports each week and making sure. And if the kid has a question that he wants to ask, if he couldn't ask it after the session, he writes it on his progress report, and then my kids respond to that. So it's they learn a lot about working with kids with disabilities. They learn the family dynamics. If they're working with a sibling, oftentimes a sibling has as many problems as the kid with the disability, because they're essentially neglected while this other kid gets all the attention. So it's been, it's been a good experience. It's hard to keep track of all of them. So I do have also another class that is a service learning class. It's the Intro to Special Physical Education, and my students go out in the field, and those kids write reflections every single time they go to the field, and it's really fun to read them from day 1 to day 30 of that class and how they feel so much more comfortable. And then the things that I've taught them, I have them for two classes, a behavior management class first and then this class. And they'll say, well, I tried the ripple effect and it really worked. And I know you said for me to be cheesy, but I just can't. But by the end of the semester now, they're jumping in and playing with the kids and really having fun with them. So it's fun to see the progress that these kids make over the course of just a semester, 30 hours of working in the field.
Well, for the Children's Center, it's always been a really good experience working with the U and the professors, with Mikey. We get that level of commitment that we so much appreciate, as I was mentioning at the beginning. And the opportunities that we provide for the students are as well very engaging. You get to build a relationship with the kids that go to our therapeutic preschool, so they're ages 2 to 5. And you really focus on creating a relationship with them. That is our focus as a therapy. It's relationship-based therapy, a lot of one-on-one moments. So you get to understand how to work through certain situations, what to do if a child is throwing a tantrum. Eventually, you could also assist our therapists in the classrooms. But it's just the learning experience that I think the students really appreciate. And for us, even if they're in a different major, if they're going for chemistry or biology and they're not really interested in completing a career in the field of mental health, it's just the fact that we're raising awareness of the importance of providing services to children that are dealing with big problems. So for us, it's really rewarding to know that our message is kind of being expanded and shared by the students that are having the experience at the Children's Center. And I think that's one of the most important things, is that we all become more aware of the importance of mental health. And it's just interesting to realize that as society, we're becoming a lot more aware of taking care of our physical aspects of the First Lady, Michelle Obama, is always talking about getting in shape and all of that, and that's wonderful. We need to, as society, become more aware of this, but mental health is still not talked about as much as we wish. So it's really good to have organizations like the Children's Center and then the community partners, our donors and volunteers that also help us spread the message. And that's one of the things that we mostly appreciate for them. And also we get to hire a lot of our volunteers, and that's one of the wonderful things. You mentioned you wanted to work with a TA that had taken your course, and that's something that we also do at the Children's Center. We want to hire staff that has already been involved in the therapeutic preschool, that understands what we do, so we don't have to train them from zero. So many of our volunteers actually take PRN positions. Basically, they become subs for the teachers in the preschool, and eventually they get hired. In fact, our executive director, Dr. Goldsmith, started as a volunteer, got hired as a PRN, and then went all the way up to the ladder to become the executive director. So we really get that satisfaction of knowing that our employees also come from a background of understanding how to work with the children. And we really like that fact of getting the students be so committed and then trying to pursue a career in the mental health field and then wanting to be hired by us. So we really like that partnership that we create with schools.
Great, thank you. This last one is for all of you. As you think about your experiences with community engagement part of this class, what do you think are the primary outcomes to come from this class? How has this impacted students, people in the community, your different organizations? And if possible, can you please give one example that you remember of this?
For me, again, I teach a big class that covers a lot of material in just 16 weeks of time. And you know, I do a bunch of things in class as class requirements to get folks to try and engage with some of what we talk about, some of what's in the book, and engage with it out in the world. You know, where do you see this in movies? I've got an assignment where people go through their music collection on iTunes and go through that and look for psychology in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get folks to, because if you think about a 7:30 a.m. intro psych class, two-thirds of my students, a little more than that, are not psych majors. They're not going to go on in human service. This is a gen ed for, you know, accountants and biology people, and not that they're bad, but I don't mean to say that derogatory, right? But folks who aren't going on in human services necessarily. And, you know, I'm trying to create a class where they can see where what we're covering at a very kind of broad, theoretical, touchstone kind of findings and keystone, you know, understandings of human behavior, how they can see that in everyday life, in their own lives, in the lives of people they touch, and the, you know, the objects around them, even their iTunes collection. So I'm trying to get it to come alive. So for me, what these community-engaged learning experiences do for students who choose to take on those 30 hours and that one additional credit, I mean, you heard Hester describe how, I mean, these kids are learning a lot about autism and developmental disorders and how to navigate, you know, behavior modification techniques. And they're learning this in just a couple of hours where, you know, in a class, I get to give a sense. I barely touch on developmental psychopathology, right? Any types of developmental disorders out there. I barely give a nod to them. And these students all of a sudden get to spend 16 weeks, 30 hours immersed in it, mm-hmm. and see it come alive. And I wish I could do that for every dimension of psychology. I'd love to do it for neuroscience, and we could get down and we could stare at neurons, and we could talk about neural networks and dopamine pathways. That'd be great. But I can't. And so I'm looking for lots of opportunities where I can get students to engage it and see this come alive and see the value of it, even if they're going to be an accountant for the rest of their life. That experience working with and knowing about developmental disabilities, like Michelle said, that broad awareness spreads because they're going to have friends and siblings, and they're going to have children potentially as they get older for whom they can provide some implicit education about mm-hmm. mental health, developmental mm-hmm. issues, homelessness, English as a second language, immigrant issues, that these community-engaged learning opportunities really broadened what they got out of my class. And so that's why I do it. That's why mm-hmm. I continue to do it, and I really push it. I mean, I spend my first 3-4 class periods, I'm hitting it every time. Really consider this. Do this. Look at these great opportunities. We invite our community partners in because I really think it's worth it for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I've talked enough about what the benefits of it, but sometimes I'll get volunteers from classes, and then they'll come to me and say, gee, could I do this again next semester? And I have one student that's been there now 7 years and working with the same kid, and he just loves it. He went through 4 years of an undergraduate and then 2 more years of a master's program. He's graduated. He's still doing it. And so he probably will until his kid ages out, although I still have 21-year-olds in the program that I don't tell anybody about, but I never will kick them out. So anyway, they really like it. The volunteers really like it. And the kids, I've got 3 kids now that have been there since day one in 2000. They started the program, and they've gone on every single night. They are there. And the parents say to me, oh, my gosh, that was a long break over Christmas. You know, why don't you start up sooner? It takes a while to recruit 140 volunteers. And then over the summer, they want me to start a program over the summer. But, I take a break. My kids take a break. But it's really good for them. And I also have my master's students are on a federal grant, and they do 15 hours a week of community service. And UFIT is one of them. And they learn to run that program. They learn, they can shift in to be the parent or child coordinator. They could be a volunteer coordinator. They can be a color group leader. They can be in charge of the pool. They can be in charge of equipment and activities in the gym. They could be in charge of the art room. So whatever, they get leadership skills from working in the program. And then they also go out into the school system. We run the PE program at the Guadalupe School now. So cool. My students get opportunities, service learning opportunities to go out and do that. Then we also run the PE program at the Pingree Center for Kids with Autism. So we have 100 kids there that we give PE to 40 minutes a week. And we've been doing that since 2007. And then my students who have graduated from my program are out in the schools teaching special PE. So my kids get to go out with them and learn from them. The things they're learning in class, they learn in the field too, from someone that's gone through the program. So there's a lot of consistency with that as opposed to me sending them with this teacher that's never been through the program. So that's been a good experience.
If I can piggyback on something she just said a minute ago about her parents of the kids with disabilities that are in her program. The parents are like, oh my gosh, when are you going to come back from Christmas break? And for my students who engage with that, I mean, what a great opportunity for them, because I'm never going to talk about it in class. I've only got 16 weeks. I'm never going to talk about the social context of disability or mental illness. I'm never going to talk about what's it like to be a family mm-hmm. navigating a developmental mm-hmm. disability or mm-hmm. navigating mental illness. But these students get to see that and see how meaningful and how valuable it is to these parents who work with developmentally disabled kids who frankly, are a triple full-time job sometimes, mm-hmm. and they are so grateful mm-hmm. that they get 2 hours mm-hmm. on a Friday night mm-hmm. to do whatever, whether it's decompress, run to the store, and mm-hmm. if
have dinner.
Have you ever had to run to a store with a kid in the first place? And imagine having to do that with the logistics of developmental disability. Just going to the store in peace and quiet, yeah. and how valuable that is. And so that experience of seeing the social context of parents, of siblings, of kids dealing with developmental disability or mental health, exactly, that's why I do this, because mm-hmm. I could never teach that. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I don't work with that population. I couldn't tell that story in my mm-hmm. class nearly as well or as compelling mm-hmm. as seeing that family come in mm-hmm. and the eyes light up and them so yeah. grateful mm-hmm. for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We also do fitness programs for the parents if they want to stay. Not a lot of them want to stay, but those that do, we interviewed parents, I'm going to say probably 8 years back, and the one thing they said is, geez, I can't even exercise now because I'm 24/7 with this kid. And so then the light went on, and I thought, okay. So then I found a strength trainer and opened up the weight room for them, and then they were in there, and they were lifting weights and getting some instruction with that. And then they said, gee, we'd really like to do a dance class. So I got Zumba, an instructor, and they started doing dance. And we did yoga for a little while, and we have spin every single night for them. So we open the spin room, and I have an instructor that teaches them spin. And we have a hip-hop now this year. So we have, and so they engage in all of those activities. And then we also ask them through an email survey, is there anything that you want us to talk about? So my kids... my master's students, design workshops for them. So we're going to do a workshop in about 3 weeks about how to teach your kid how to ride a bike and how to teach your kid how to throw a ball and catch a ball. Those motor skills, they don't have a clue how to teach them. So we give informational workshops to them. And then we have a lawyer who's a parent of one of the kids, and she comes in and teaches them how to do estate planning. So every year, once a year, she'll come do a little workshop for them on that. Then they wanted to know what other programs are there available out in the field. So we developed a PowerPoint presentation that tells all the other programs that will take kids with disabilities that they can get involved in.
One of the things that I think is also very valuable for students, aside from what we've been talking about, is also the fact that you get to learn about yourself. You really get to learn how do I deal with the novelty of working with children who have been abused sexually or physically, and they reject having a relationship with me. How do I deal with that first interaction with them, and how do I overcome the fact that they don't want to say hi the very first few times? You get to learn about your level of compassion for those situations that children are going through. You learn to approach it clinically so that you can also build on that compassion and also on your patients. But ultimately, many students also get to define this as a career path that they really want to go into. So it's a confirmation of, you know what, this really makes sense to me. This is what I've thought about doing. But now that I'm actually doing the work itself, I get to have that confirmation to myself that this is the field I want to go for the rest of my life. Or, never mind, I thought I was going to be really good, and yep. this is not as easy as I thought, or how it's presented in the classroom now that I have the actual experience. So learning about what you like, what you can work with, and what you cannot is just extremely valuable, I think, for anyone, students or just community volunteers that we work with. So mm-hmm. that's another very mm-hmm. important
that's
component
a great point.
For,
mm-hmm.
for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of coming off what you know Michelle said, you know, it really kind of is that stamp of, this is something that I really want to do. And what's very encouraging to me is when, because I have a couple students from last year who are still volunteering at the Children's Center, and all of them told me, like, yo, I am not good with kids. I don't know the first thing about, you know, talking to them, how to tell them to stop doing what they're doing. And I said, look, you're just going to figure it out. You know, just keep going. You're going to figure it out. And just to see them, you know, still being there and being able to, you know, do that and help these kids is, you know, very encouraging to me. And I think the most valuable thing that I get out of this is, you know, just like this human interconnectedness. There's this quote by Chief Seattle that says, you know, humankind is not woven the web of life. We're all but one thread within it. What do we do to this web? We do to ourselves. All things are bound together. So you really see this kind of like chain effect of, you know, you help one person, and they're able to instill that help in another person. So, you know, and I get such, you know, great joy out of that as well. And, And I guess ultimately what I want students to leave the classroom setting with is to have a really like a earnest ability to foster empathy, mm-hmm. you know, for a general population, because they learn through interaction, and then with new experiences, they're able to really kind of just, you know, muster that out there. And then, yeah, I think it's a good day for everyone. So.
That's great. Thank you. Now we're going to open up to questions from the audience. Sophia.
So we have a few minutes. We ask that you guys say your full name if you ask a question.
Hi, I'm Jeff Dolby, a political science major. So I'm curious how often somebody actually comes and starts doing this and then decides, you know, this actually isn't my thing. Is that a common occurrence or is that a bit of a rarity?
I'd say it's more of a rarity, but it happens. If I were to try and put a percent on it, less than 1 in 10, but enough that I could count them for sure, where folks more often than not, so two things happen. One is students come in, I want to do community engaged learning, this sounds great, I'd love to work at Children's Center, I'd love to work at Salt Lake County Youth Services, and they are so busy already. They work, they're married, they have a child, they're carrying 20 hours, they're trying to graduate this May. Oh, I could have told them that this is just not going to work. And so they're overloaded, and so they bow out because of overload. So that's one thing that happens when folks don't follow through. But the other thing that happens is folks realize, maybe I want to switch organizations. This isn't a good fit for me. Mm-hmm. Enough so that I don't think I can do 16 weeks of this, but I do want to fulfill my community engaged obligation. I want to do that. And we've had folks switch when they realize that working with the homeless population, just it something about the interactions aren't what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for something that they can immediately, more quickly see that connection and that reward for them in their personal experience. And so we've had that. But it's not never. It definitely mm-hmm. happens. But I think those are really the two times or the two types of things that happen when it does.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I've noticed, too, is that maybe they really just want to stick to the commitment to the class. So they just show up, but mm-hmm. they're not the committed volunteers to where they're really working with the kids and trying to understand their interaction with the children is not sufficient so they can provide the support that we need them mm-hmm. to. So we also mm-hmm. see the students that are there fulfilling their hours, but not really engaging. Mm-hmm. So that's another side, but it very rarely happens as well.
I was going to say, we should know about that when that happens. Because we want to encourage that. Yeah, we want to help people get in positions mm-hmm. where they can be engaged. Yeah. I mean, both for their own benefit and for what they're doing for that organization. We want to create that fit mm-hmm. if we can.
My name's Jeff Furlong. I'm a sociology major, and my question for the panel is, you've talked a lot about the benefits and the hallelujahs and hoorays. I want to know, what's the biggest challenge, and what are you doing to overcome that?
Well, for the Children's Center, the biggest challenge is when working with students is when the semester is over, because mm-hmm. then we don't have any volunteers. A lot of our classes in the therapeutic preschool rely on having those volunteers because we have very difficult children. So two of them that are constantly needing that one-on-one interaction with the therapists, then it just becomes very overwhelming. And it tends to happen that we go through these downslopes of having no volunteers and then having many volunteers. So that's one of the challenges, really, is not having that support. But as far as working with the students, perhaps what I just mentioned, also working with students that are not fully committed, that don't really see themselves in the field or are interested. So teaching them how to work through those things or engaging them a little bit more is also a challenge for us. It rarely happens. So.
I think for me, for the class, my biggest challenge is getting more folks to enroll in it. You know, I typically average, you know, 10%, a little more than 10% of my class will enroll in it. And so for me, I mean, with the opportunities I've described, like, this is a great way to have this class that I'm yammering up here in some lectures come alive to folks. I'd like more folks to get that, right? Because that way I can do more with my class and they can see more. How am I remedying it? Boy, I push it hard the first few days. I invite my community partners. We have folks who've done community engaged learning come back and talk about their experience. I wish I knew better what I could do more to get folks to engage with it. Mm-hmm. So.
My name is Enzo Krensky. I've got two questions. One is, how would I get involved in the program? And two, what would be the advantage of being a community engaged scholar once I graduate?
The how to get involved, if you were taking my class, be there the first couple of days, and I'm going to tell you, you should do it. I bet you the Bennion Center has a comprehensive list of the courses across the university that have a community engaged learning component to it. And so if you were so interested, you could identify and probably plot out a course across the next couple of years of this semester, I'll take this, and that'll fit my major, this will get a gen ed, and I can do a whole bunch of community engaged learning if you love that idea. I'm sure that there's a lot, right? We're just speaking about what we do in my general psychology class. I'm sure that there's a lot of variability across departments and fields, across political science, across geography, whatever other courses have a community engaged learning component, probably might sound pretty different from what we do here, so I couldn't speak to that. But that's how you get involved. I mean, sign up for those courses where it is an add-on for that course, and we would encourage it, I think all of us, from the different perspectives of teaching, from personal experience, and from the value for the community and the agencies. We'd love it if more folks did it. There's a second component. What's the benefit?
Scholar.
Oh, yeah, if you become a scholar. I don't know that much about the program. Can you speak to it? Are you one of the scholars?
No,
are you one of the scholars? Oh, our moderator can answer this.
So the Community Engaged Scholar is a really cool program where we're required to take a certain number of community engaged learning classes, like classes like that. And you get it recognized on your graduation certificate, and it's really cool because you have to complete 400 hours of community service, so you get a lot of one-on-one experience and hands-on experience, and 100 of it are connected to your major, what you're studying, and you have to work on this 100-hour integrated service project in your major, and it really helps you connect what you're learning in school to the real world, which helps you in the career and just life in general. So there's lots of benefits. I could go on forever about it, so I'll talk to you about it later. Bye.
Also, at least from my experience working with students, if they ever need us to send a recommendation letter or if they're applying for med school, having a letter from the Children's Center saying you have committed to this amount of hours and this is the sort of work that you did, it's great mm-hmm. to have that for when you're applying for medical school, for law school, or for just a job position. Mm-hmm. I always talk wonders about my volunteers, and I really want to help them out because they have provided that service to mm-hmm. us.
Yeah, there's definitely that benefit. If you're doing anything after university experience, whether it's jobs or graduate school, to the extent you can become involved in a smaller group of professionals who get to know you personally and get to know your skills, your abilities, your communication strategies, your ability to solve problems independently, all of these things that when you need a recommendation from someone, it is so much more valuable if that someone can write a recommendation and speak to specific instances, specific skills, specific communication strategies, rather than saying, oh, yeah, globally, they strike me as a good person. When they can say that this person was incredibly reliable, every week they showed up and they were dedicated and they went above and beyond and they looked for opportunities mm-hmm. to learn more about the kids that they served in my program, mm-hmm. that kind of a letter of recommendation from someone is so valuable. So, I mean, I don't know if you... It's great to have the label scholar on your degree because it has that indication that you did all of this. But in addition to that, that connection you get with a TA, a professor, your community partners who can speak to those specific skills and abilities that you illustrated, those go so far beyond any GPA or GRE test score you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. So... And that sense of community is a lot what those volunteers are looking for, too, because you get to know the volunteers and their names, and everybody gets together on a Friday night and for one purpose, and so they meet all sorts of other people, other students from other walks of life that they wouldn't meet if they were just hanging out at the Hyper Building. So that sense of community, I think, is really important for them. When those kids show up, and I don't know whose smile is bigger, the volunteers or the kids, because they just... get so much out of it. And just to see their kid run across the floor and jump in their arms, it's pretty cool.
My name is Jenny Hong. I'm a sophomore here at the U. My question's actually for Mikey. When you're working with the kids at the Children's Center, I'm sure that at times it's super challenging as well as it is rewarding. What are some of the significant things that the kids have taught you, or what have you learned from the children through your entire experience?
Great question. It's really honed this relationship that I have with the kids. It's like when I walk into the class now, I'm just like, it's like, you know, when you walk into your house and then you just see your dog for the first time. I'm not saying that like they're dogs or anything like that. I'm not making that connection, but it's just like you just have this like automatic, like magnetic, just, you know, this aura, and you just want to go up to them and just hug them, and I know it's a very indescribable feeling just seeing that. And you know, and not only that, but the personal relationship that you develop with all 9 students and being able to know how to communicate with a certain one. I think that's the, you know, the coolest thing that that I get out of it. And most importantly, it's developing a relationship with your TPS as well. I mean, you become very good friends with them, especially. I mean, I've been working with Jenny and John, my TPS, for, you know, over a year now, so I've gotten to know both of them.
What's a TPS?
It's a therapeutic preschool
specialist.
Yeah,
specialist. So the teachers in the therapeutic preschool, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they're wonderful. They're great with kids, and they teach me how to be better with kids. I mean, like I told you, I didn't know the first thing when it comes to dealing with kids. But I mean, I can literally be anywhere and like see a kid and like talk to him, like, you know, we're good buddies. And I think that's, you know, nothing else can teach me that besides the experience of being there. And, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have. Please join me in thanking our awesome host and our amazing panel.